there were a number of trust me moments along the way, and I'm happy to say that since then we've been able to meet and exceed all the expectations that have been set, and so I think that definitely gives us a good leg up for the future.
Welcome to episode 233 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. We've followed Bozeman, Montana's fiber optic network initiative for the past few years now as it developed from vision to reality. The open access network is already serving local government facilities and public schools, and businesses are also being connected. In this interview, Christopher talks with the city's economic development director, Britt Fontenot, and Anthony Kokenauer, president of Bozeman Fiber, the nonprofit entity created to manage and operate the network. Christopher, Britt, and Anthony share an update on what has been happening with the network since our last interview. That was during episode 142, back in March of 2015. The guys talk about the nonprofit open access model and the city's current role. They also discuss how the community obtained funding for the project and what it was like rallying local banks to contribute to the project. Now here's Chris with Britt Fontenot, the city's economic development director, and Anthony Kokenauer, president of Bozeman Fiber.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with two folks from Bozeman, Montana, catching up on a network that we previously discussed. First of all, we have Britt Fontenot, who is the City of Bozeman Economic Development Director. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And we are also welcoming back Anthony Kokenauer, the President of Hoplite Industries, and now the President of Bozeman Fiber. Welcome back.
Thanks for having us today, Chris.
So I definitely think people will have to listen to the previous show to get all of the flavors about what Bozeman's like for people who might not be familiar and exactly where this project was, the origin of it. But for a brief reminder, what is Bozeman Fiber?
Bozeman Fiber is an open access, not-for-profit wholesale fiber network based here in Bozeman. Total network size is about 24.5 total route miles. And I believe today we've passed just under 3,000 structures with heavy emphasis on commercial services.
And Britt, I'm curious if you can just remind us, I think, you know, this is a show, we mostly talk about municipal networks. Bozeman Fiber is not owned or operated by the City of Bozeman. How does it work?
The City of Bozeman neither owns nor operates the Bozeman Fiber Network. Bozeman Fiber is a private organization, raised private capital in order to construct and operate the network. The City of Bozeman's role in this construction, in this model, in this open access model, has been to hopefully provide some leadership from our elected officials in the value of having an open access network in our community that provides several opportunities. One, to lower costs for the end user for fiber services. Two, to facilitate competition in that market, and three, to expand the reach and expand the opportunities for our local businesses as an economic development driver in a community like Bozeman, the fastest growing community in the state of Montana, with a very important technology and growing, I would add, technology sector who can utilize and leverage this new infrastructure.
And Anthony, I want to come back to you to talk a little bit about that nonprofit model. Can you just tell us, the question I always have is what if a decision was made to sell it off, for instance, how would that be made? Who would make that decision?
So a lot of thought and effort went into structuring the leadership, the governance of Bozeman Fiber. And I think unlike a lot of other not-for-profits, they kind of go for that 501c3 status for various reasons. 501c4 status that Bozeman Fiber obtained from the get-go. We're actually a non-member-based not-for-profit, and so the board is truly there for governance. There's no ownership. There's no individual stake that takes place there, and so the leadership is actually spread across a combination of K-12 and higher education, healthcare, economic development, technical interest from the private sector, and then we do have at least always maintain room for at least one at-large community at-large board seat. So that way, it's not all tech, it's not all education, healthcare, or economic development. That we can represent a much broader set of interests and needs across the community.
So when the board makes decisions, are they unanimous decisions? Do they have a vote? I'm always just curious. And ultimately, is it the board that makes all these decisions? I mean, I just want to press in because I think, you know, usually we're talking about networks in which the city council is the ultimate authority. But here it's a board of folks that are representing community anchors and businesses and things like that.
So certainly it is run like any other corporate board. Our governance board that you would see, you know, there are structured meetings. There's a great deal of background work that goes into prepping for these meetings, you know, and there's open discussion, there's debate, you know, happily so. There's a great deal of alignment and agreement. And I think, you know, the number of things that the board would openly disagree on, we could probably count on one hand over the last 2 years.
Now, one of the things that we were just discussing in the pre-call was whether or not anyone's trying to copy you. And Britt, I'd like to come back to you to ask if you could just give me a sense of when you said the city was involved in this as a certainly in a convening role, what are some of the unique value adds that the local government contributed to make sure that Bozeman Fiber would be successful?
Well, I think they provided the vision and the leadership in order to raise this issue to a level where community anchor institutions saw the value in becoming a part of the network. Because let's face it, those anchor institutions, which in our case are the city of Bozeman, the county, Gallatin County, and our school district, were taking a risk with us, with Bozeman Fiber at the time. I shouldn't say us, but with Bozeman Fiber, because this hadn't been done in this manner in the past. And so they saw... The city commission was instrumental in approving the plan, the pro forma that the Bozeman Fiber organization eventually used to put the financing together for the network build, and of course signing into long-term contracts, 10-year contracts with Bozeman Fiber to provide dark fiber. And I want to distinguish between the dark fiber anchor tenants, city, county schools, with the lit fiber network, where we have service providers on the network who are providing services to our, at the moment, mostly to our businesses in our primary commercial corridors in our downtown and another area called our Cannery District, and then in the future, our Midtown District. So the city has provided that leadership. They were a part of the group that selected, or at least were requesting certain board members be present to represent these various interest groups across the community, and have been very much a partner in the organization, getting the organization up and running. But since then, the city has taken a bit of a backseat role. Since Bozeman Fiber has shown that it can construct a network, has shown that it can deliver services, with an eye towards how do we, as a city, invest in infrastructure that continues to facilitate the outgrowth of a fiber network, not just for the benefit of Bozeman Fiber, but for the benefit of the business community who can potentially use a number of services with proper infrastructure in order to get their needs met via fiber optic networks.
Now, I want to turn to the open access nature of the network. And so I think, Anthony, it makes sense to come back to you and talk about this. How many ISPs do you have active on the network already?
Currently, there are five ISP partners that we have signed up. And if memory serves, with the latest lineup, we have four more under negotiation at various stages of negotiation. Our original goal, our minimum, was in the 4 to 6 range. You know, our stretch goal overall in terms of ISP partners to bring diversity and competition was in the 10 to 12 range. And so I'm pretty confident the next 60 to 90 days we'll be in that 10 to 12 ISP partner range. Fortunately, I think it's been the draw of the open access piece, the fact that, you know, Bozeman Fiber is truly neutral across the board. That has been, you know, one of the selling points for the new partners that are new to the direct fiber services space.
And can you give me a sense of how many of the providers that are operating on your network or may soon finalize the agreement? How many of those are sort of local to the region versus larger, more, you know, maybe based in the coastal areas, companies that are not from Montana or the region?
Right now, I think we have one that's decidedly out of Montana that has actually made their first direct foray into Montana because of Bozeman Fiber, and so that's exciting. Right now, we're majority of the partners are in the small to medium size space and are also within the region. So if we include Wyoming, you know, within the region, that particular partner is included as well. Some of the negotiations, as you would probably guess, with two or three of the larger providers that you could probably name, you know, they're large organizations. Negotiations take time. Changing thinking and showing the value that we bring to even them takes time as well. But so far, so good. Things remain quite positive, and you know, in terms of overall perception of Bozeman Fiber's mission and how we've executed against that is quite favorable.
Terrific. You mentioned that you were passing thousands of structures. Can you give us a sense of the breakdown of commercial versus maybe like schools versus any residential areas that you might be touching?
You know, kind of at a high level, I would put it at about 70% commercial and about 30% residential. You know, that varies a bit based on how far off the backbone route you go. You know, in terms of kind of heat mapping that out, or, you know, if you measure that at about 100 feet, it's probably a much higher percentage of commercial. If you go up to about 500 or 1,000 feet, you probably have much more of an even blend between commercial and residential.
And you've been operating for a few months, so I'm always nervous about asking outright for take rates. If you wanted to share it, that's fine. But I think the key question is just whether or not you're hitting targets for customers as well as for service providers.
I would say so, and certainly it's early. You know, having less than 60 days of full run rate on commercial operations, you know, it's tough to pull out hard stats there. You know, in terms of net interest, you know, if you look at the take rate from a traditional sales point of view, the interest and the pipeline are certainly there to both meet and exceed our sales goals, and I think it's actually quite encouraging for the early ISP partners as well. And so, you know, again, kind of putting on that, taking a for-profit look at what is the, you know, what does the wholesale sales side look like? Pretty favorable and positive, I'd say.
So, Britt, I want to come back to you and talk a little bit about the potential expansion. You know, I'm always interested in what it takes to make something go citywide. And I know that there may be many steps between here and there. But from the city's perspective, what sorts of things can you do to make it easier for Bozeman Fiber to expand?
Well, one of the things we can do is put a policy in place that is forward-thinking in regards to where this network can grow. And by virtue of the architecture of the original Bozeman Fiber Network, we were out to all the schools scattered around the community. And so that was by design, because those areas are often surrounded by either the existing or future subdivisions, which include potential for fiber-to-the-home opportunities. Although the original Phase one plan is really just about the businesses and economic development. And that's where we're focusing our efforts. That's where Bozeman Fiber is focusing its efforts right now. But the city is working on a policy that includes several layers. One of them is a dig once policy. How can we ensure that we're doing what we can to preserve our infrastructure, i.e. not digging streets up every time a provider may want to go into get a conduit in the ground, but having the city invest in some multi-duct conduit in appropriate areas so that those assets can be preserved, while at the same time facilitating not only Bozeman Fiber, but other service providers into that same ground or into that same duct. So that's one way. And then, of course, the other way that I think is important is to take a look at our own capital improvement plan at the city. Where are our roads being considered for reconstruction? What sidewalks are we looking at replacing or improving? What trails can we look at that go in directions and in areas that we can use those construction times to put conduit in the ground that may not necessarily connect on day one, but look to connect to the backbone of Bozeman Fiber at some point in the future, facilitating even more use of the network by more and more customers. And so it's really just trying to take a broad look, a long view of what we're trying to accomplish by providing connectivity initially in the business districts, and I mentioned the downtown and the midtown, and where we leveraged our tax increment finance districts to deploy multi-duct conduit for the purposes I just described, that's now being leased by Bozeman Fiber and potentially other tenants of the conduit, to facilitate the network, the construction of the network, but also future connectivity in other locations.
And, you know, another thing I would tack on that, you know, I think we've lost sight of, even, you know, within the Bozeman Fiber Board, because it's been, you know, such a busy couple of years, is one of the milestones that we achieved as a community led by this effort, you know, both private sector effort, what are now many of the Bozeman Fiber supporters, and the city of Bozeman, is a one dig policy. was happily embraced and passed unanimously by the city council, that really makes it such that if there's a public works project going on, there's now mandated coordination and collaboration that goes on between public and private sector to basically say, hey, we're going to have a street open, we're going to have a trench open. If you have any desire to be here, come on down. Taxpayers are already, already paid essentially in one form or another to open up trench for a public works project. If there's direct easement involvement or proximity to easement, that takes a great deal of the cost out of private sector endeavors for anything you would need to put in the ground that would be permittable, is now just part and parcel for how we operate as a community. And as we look around the nation, One Dig is not unique by any stretch of the imagination, but it's certainly not as common as we would like. And I'm happy to see that, that's one of the positive outcomes that we've had through this, what's almost now a 4-year effort.
That's good to hear that that's happening. I think one of the reasons you don't see it as often is that people talk about being in favor of it, but then when you're actually trying to implement it and you find that people at Public Works don't want to change what they've been doing, or that, there's some hurdle along the way, it kind of falls by the wayside. So I'm glad you were able to persevere.
It's not to say we haven't had our struggles. I mean, it's not. There are definitely some challenges associated with changing the way people think about their relationship to infrastructure and what even is infrastructure, and convincing our public works department, who has been extremely helpful in many facets of this project, that plastic pipe is really what we're talking about here, and it's no more or less. It's been a challenge, but we've benefited from some of the work that's been done in Lincoln, Nebraska, and some of the efforts that they've taken under David Young. There has been a very good resource for us to try and understand how it can be done and done successfully. And I would just, the final piece of that, Chris, on the city side is, the financial model. First of all, you have to have the willpower to want to invest in this piece of infrastructure, because you believe that there's a community benefit. There's a real community benefit to actually putting that pipe in the ground. And then you have to come up with the money to do it. And so having a financial model that pays back, if you will, for that infrastructure improvement in some meaningful way has been another challenge for us at this early stage of the city-owned conduit portion. And so we don't have it all figured out, but we are a long ways from where we were when we first started, as Anthony said, 4 years ago, to having a really robust policy, but also commitment, which is almost just as difficult as policy itself.
Well, when you talk about the financial model, let me just check in, because now Bozeman Fiber, I believe, was financed largely with local loans from banks in the region, in the area. And I think that's terrific. I want to see if we have any tips in a couple of minutes for people that might want to try and do something similar. How is to the extent that there are charges associated with Dig Once or other city activities, how are those financed?
Well, let me just be clear about what I said a second ago, which is the financial model for licensing the city-owned conduit to providers. And so that's the part that I was referring to when I said there, we're trying to find the sweet spot between the investment of the plastic pipe and the construction costs associated with that, with the return for the fees to license that same conduit, whether that be Bozeman Fiber or any of a number of providers who may choose to license that conduit for their own use. So that's the model I was referring to. In terms of the Dig Once policy, there are some examples, particularly out of the Lincoln area, where you can incentivize the construction of additional conduit simply when pipe is going in the ground that another organization might be deploying, and then paying the delta between the cost of the pipe and the cost of construction. You can reduce your construction costs dramatically if you pull 4 conduits instead of 2, for example.
I guess I'm curious, Anthony, do you have any tips for people who might be looking to try and unlock local financing from banks in the way that Bozeman Fiber has?
Certainly. I think, first and foremost, it doesn't happen without relationships, and being able to communicate the value, the community value, not necessarily just the dollars and cents, but what it means to a school, to healthcare, and so on, and economic development, of course. And the second piece is understanding you know, kind of the difference in focus between large national or international banking institutions and local or regional banking institutions is that, you know, these banks, the eight banks that came together for Bozeman Fiber, have a vested interest in seeing the community grow. I mean, these are, you know, over 60% of home loans are written by, you know, here in the region, as I understand it, are written by the eight banks that helped to back Bozeman Fiber. And so if you look at their stake in it, people build businesses, they buy homes, they buy, you know, secondary homes. They maybe open other businesses. The banks, of course, can directly benefit from taking a step back and deciding that, you know, what may otherwise be considered, especially if you couch it in a venture capital sort of like, what may otherwise be considered to be a high-risk venture, you know, with, you know, potentially some uncertain outcomes. You know, there's very few certainties in life, as we all know. But rather, if they look at that as we're making this investment, you know, risk being what it is, for community benefit, and then indirectly, of course, you know, from a commercial perspective, the banks will benefit if they continue to do the right things and keeping customers happy and being relevant in the community. And that was that one piece, you know, that community benefit piece was absolutely key. So if I call out leadership at First Interstate Bank and some of the members of the Glacier Bank Corp that are represented here in Bozeman, when leadership of those organizations had that light bulb turn on, that was transformative. You know, and I can very distinctly recall a conversation among what are now the Bozeman Fiber board members, and expressing the fact that, you know, had an absolute willingness to go tell the story, to go make this pitch to some of the local banks, and at the same time expressing concern about the ability to tell a story that is probably not often told. Certainly not the story's not been told until we told it here. And walking out of that first meeting, you know, there was that awkward silence after we delivered the pitch and we kind of gave the talking points and bullet points. And the light bulb went off at that moment, and from there it was just you know, nothing but the positivity of the, I think, the 12 local banks that we have. Eight signed on, and I can tell you we did not have to pitch all eight very hard. We pitched three directly, and from there it was a groundswell. And you don't see competing banks come together in the way that these banks have, and so that in its own right has been amazing. I guess the point there, the nugget of wisdom, is be able to understand, you know, the focus of those local and regional banks, be able to communicate on their terms and equate what you may be trying to do with the community project to how it may directly or indirectly, you know, benefit those banks in the future. Because certainly there's a lot of great PR that they get out of it. There's a lot of feel-good stuff, but at the same time, they're also, you know, planting seeds for future growth in a community that they're directly invested in.
Well, I hope that those words help others to duplicate that, because, you know, with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, we care a lot about local businesses, local banking, and that sort of thing. And I think there's potential out there. So I hope others are able to unlock that same success. Yeah, I think my final question I'll ask to you first, Britt, and then I'll come back to you, Anthony, is just, if there's anything that's surprising to you in terms of where you are today, what the outcomes really have been, you know, that you might not have expected 2 or 3 years ago when you were working on this.
And I'm not surprised by how much effort it took. We knew this was going to be concerted, hard, roll up your sleeves, everybody get it, pitch in kind of effort. So that wasn't part of it. But what was really surprising was the commitment by the board, and particularly Anthony. It's surprising in a way, not like, oh, you know, people are going to start to lose interest, but just at every step of the way, our board has been there to take the calls, has been there to have the meetings. And these are all professionals in our community who have other responsibilities and have, you know, other demands on their time. And I was just really surprised how committed our team was to getting this taken done, and they maintain that level of commitment today. And I guess the other surprise for me was the demand. How I knew that there was demand out there. What continues to surprise me is the level of interest that now the community is taking on, not just the business community, but others in the residential areas of our town. The demand that's out there. I mean, I knew that there was enough demand to make this project pencil out. but I think there's even more than we had anticipated. And so those are the two things that I guess have surprised me the most, and both of them positive.
Great. Anthony, what would you add to that?
I would probably go back to the financing piece, having had probably more than my fair share of at-bats with venture capital pitches and things of that nature. It was a positive, I could say surprise, but really a shock that we had the model as right as we did so early on, that it was just very plain and obvious to the banking community that ultimately came together to fund us. And so that, I thought, you know, had you asked me 6 months before that, you know, and privately or in a group setting, I would have said, well, funding would be our number one challenge. And in fact, that was arguably one of the easier things that we did along the way. So that was certainly a surprise.
Well, let me just pause for 1 second to let a few people unclench their teeth when they hear that, because I think, you know, that's certainly not the experience for most people working in this area. But please continue.
Certainly not, and not typically my experience outside the not-for-profit space and the commercial arenas. I would say the other surprise as well, and it's a happy surprise, and, you know, having the challenges along the way that any large construction project, any large capital project will have, you know, just I think any even commercial providers run into permit issues or unexpected things when you're digging and so on. But the willingness for anchor tenants and other community members to come together. So the other side of this, of course, you know, with the finance discussion is you have to have that business plan. You have to have that pro forma that says, hey, guys and girls in the banking community or in the investment community, here's what we plan to go do, and here's how we plan to go do it. We had an entire audience worth of anchor tenants that, you know, collectively signed no less than 30 years worth of fiber contracts, you know, with I would say relatively little effort. But, you know, again, I think it's a reflection that relatively low effort that went into winning those audiences over was really just a reflection of the value that Bozeman Fiber was trying to bring to its mission. And so that for me would have been the second largest hurdle had you asked me months before, you know, how do we get these anchor tenants on board and signed up so we can, you know, we can execute the loan documents. And I think those two things being working out as well as they did were absolutely pivotal. But again, it comes back to that being able to articulate the mission and the value as well as having the relationships, you know, because of course there were a number of trust me moments along the way. And I'm happy to say that since then we've been able to meet and exceed all the expectations that have been set. And so I think that definitely gives us, you know, a good leg up for the future.
Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to update us. And I have no doubt that we'll be coming back to you in the future to get some more lessons learned and check in on your progress.
Well, thanks, Chris.
And thank you as well, Chris.
That was Britt Fontenot, Bozeman's Economic Development Director, and Anthony Kokenauer, President of Bozeman Fiber. As the project continues to progress, we'll be sure to share updates. Learn more at muninetworks.org. Just click on the Bozeman tag. Remember, we have transcripts for this and other Community Broadband Bits podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. You can also follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter, where the handle is @muninetworks. Subscribe to this podcast and all of the podcasts in the ILSR podcast family on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research by also subscribing to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. We want to thank Admiral Bob for the song Turbo Tornado, licensed through Creative Commons, and we also want to thank you for listening to episode 233 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.